Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Let's get underway.
Saturdays were made for this. The biggest names and the biggest games. Right here.
Woo! For King G, where comfort is king.
2, 3, 4.
Hey, ho, let's go. Triple M rocks the NRL.
Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Scrum.
Yes, excellent to have your company for the afternoon. So nice to be here ahead of a game of footy. Manly taking on the Gold Coast. As I look at that Tyre Power scoreboard, though, what's gone on so far? Just to keep you up to date, the Eels, too good for the Broncos, sticking them at the moment in last place in danger of the wooden spoon. 26 points to 12. We'll speak with Mitchell Moses a little bit later on. The Panthers have sealed the minor premiership. Ryan Girdler, 32 points to 12 winners over the Cowboys in Townsville. Are they going all the way?
Possibly, Tony. I mean, I think it's fair to say that they've been the most consistent side all year. And they showed that in the way that they've performed over the last couple of weeks, especially when they come up against sides that, you know, generally everyone expects them to beat. That's always sort of the challenge at this end of the year. They've built their season well, Tony, and they're heading into the finals full of confidence and with not a lot of injuries. So anything's possible.
Nathan Brown is with us. Emma Lawrence as well. Hello.
Tone.
You've enjoyed that? The Panthers, third time they've got the minor premiership. Last two times they picked up the premiership itself.
Yeah, no, it's great to see, I suppose, another club that's probably gone through some tough times 10 years ago to start rebuilding their club maybe, you know, 6, 7 years ago, and all the hard work that a lot of people have put in are now sort of starting to reap the rewards for that. And they're obviously one of a number of teams who obviously can win the comp. If you're running first, you're doing a lot right. The big challenge will be when they play the sides that have experienced the big games and won in the big games. That'll be their big challenge, but yep, they've certainly earned the right to for the minor premiership. They've certainly earned the right to be a side that everyone's given a big chance to.
Yep.
They just seem to be, they look like a bunch of kids, like that 10-year-old team that are just going out there and just having so much fun. And I know winning does that,
yep,
but they're such a tight group. And I know that from a media perspective, they're all so easy to deal with. They're really, really good, polite young boys. The club are great to deal with. So, yeah, I don't think there's many that are unhappy to see Penrith in the position that they're in.
No, I think that's true. We're going to get to that in more detail as the show goes on. It is, of course, the Women in League round in the NRL. And, Em, during the week, you posted a lot on social media, or yeah, went around elsewhere, I guess, about Chris's wife and how, in fact, and how important she is in the family and to do with rugby league.
Yeah, so we'd been asked to think of a woman who's, you know, doing great things in the game and post and share and encourage others to do the same. And I saw lots of my friends posting about, you know, female players or women working in the media, and they're all doing a great job. But then I thought, you know, sometimes the partners, I guess, go unnoticed because it's all about the players. And I know for Catherine, my sister-in-law in particular, it's been a really tough couple of years, and even 10 years with, I guess, the amount of injuries that Chris has had. And they honestly, they ride the highs and the lows. Even, I mean, the lows can be really low. Everyone thinks it's, as a so-called wag, it's, you know, it's all glamorous and events, but really it's not like that at all. The injuries, the stress of the contract negotiation, seeing the awful things that people will write on social media about these players, and it is really awful, and it's hard to ignore that. Yeah. Even if you don't read it yourself, someone else will send it to you, so it's tough. So, yeah, I just gave a shout-out to Catherine because I guess everyone forgets that, if anything, it's tougher for them because you want to try and, I guess, take away that pain from them, but you can't sometimes just, all you can do is just be there. So I think the partners do a great job and sometimes don't get enough credit as well for the support they give the players.
No, it was brilliant. So big shout out to all those women, and no matter how they're involved in rugby league. And as you say, you know, they can be players, they can be administrators, they can be referees and officials, they can be the partners, they can be the mums. Brownie, for you and your family, obviously, there's important, you've moved around a lot. There's a whole lot of things that impact on them.
Yeah, lots of my oldest daughter, she's in year 12 this year and her 10th school.
Wow.
So that's in different countries, and now we're on the verge of going to another country. So they certainly are. You ask a lot of them, but on the other hand, they get to experience a lot of things that most kids don't get to experience as well. Yeah, so that has its positives, and I suppose it can have some sort of negatives, but they certainly become more grounded and or more well-rounded, I suppose, sorry. And for my kids, you know, we have one that was born in England, one went to England when she was 6 months old, and another one was three, another one was six, and then we had 6 years there, so they got to do a lot of travelling, went to a lot of different countries for young kids, and then obviously went to Newcastle and had a great experience there for 4 years. It's a great place to live, and then we're back in Sydney to... Fortunately, now we get to head to Auckland, which is a beautiful place. So it does have its challenges for
Auckland or Redcliffe.
Oh, well, your central case.
Sounds like, Tony, that Brownie's had one in every port that he's been. Looks like there could be another baby coming. Yeah. For
you can add a Kiwi to the list.
We've hung the gloves up there, Greg. Yeah.
Well, hanging the gloves up won't do any good, I tell you.
That's right.
What about parents? I mean, I saw Jonathan Thurston saying that his mum was the most instrumental factor in his career. Mm-hmm. And that whole thing of when you're a kid, you're going around to junior carnivals, you know, driving you around.
We all know how we're all parents here, other than them, obviously. So we all know what it means to, you know, devote that part of your life to your kids and what they're, you know, sporting, what they're interested in at that young age. And I think for me, yeah, my father was always like the hard one. You need to be better and this and that, and they push you. But, you know, mum always gave you that little bit of love that you needed every now and again as well as a young man sort of coming through. So.
Did your mum say to your father, oh, he's too good looking for rugby league, you should play a different sport? Was she always encouraging of the sport?
I don't think so. Yeah, always, yeah. Loved the sport. My brother played as well, so, you know, went to as many games as they could. And then, you know, the sacrifices they made when I moved to Penrith, because I went there when I was 19, and I went from basically living at home with mum and dad down in Wollongong to travelling up for the first couple of years until I moved up to Penrith a couple of years later. And then every second weekend or every game in Sydney, they would just be there just to, you know, they love the game, but also the support element's really crucial, and social media and things weren't around back in the day, which was kind of good. But you certainly needed your mum's support. I did anyway. It was good.
Just on the support and sacrifice that parents make, just thinking back to when my brother was coming through, my mum made massive sacrifices as well. And she was working in the city at the time and had a really, you know, big job in the government, and then ended up, she couldn't, you know, take us to sport, and Chris was training 4 or 5 days a week. So ended up, don't want to say, I mean, she still was working, but gave up this amazing job to work closer to home and work part-time so that she could take my sister and I as well. But Chris was, you know, training 4 or 5 days a week. So I remember we'd most afternoons, we'd drive out to Liverpool for his Harold Matz or SG ball training. She'd have all the food packed. Brooke and I would sit in the car. We'd be doing our homework in the car for 3 hours while we waited for Chris at training because it was too far to go back home. So all of that stuff. Mum essentially not gave up her career, but gave up a really good job so that Chris could have that opportunity and then eventually go on to play first grade. So all the mums do a great job.
Yeah, indeed. So a big shout out to all those women in rugby league. It is your round. So much to get to. We're going to chat with Mitchell Moses, as I said. Brad Fittler will also join us. Sturlo is in at 2, heading towards kickoff 3 o'clock. Manly taking on the Gold Coast Titans. It's a Saturday scrum, doing it for King G. Some crowded house for you. It's Triple M rocks the footy. Nathan Brown, Emma Lawrence, Ryan Girdler, Tony Squires. The Eels, too good for the Broncos, 26 points to 12. They didn't start off all that confidently, though, the Eels. They seemed desperate and maybe a little bit impatient to score tries, which is something they haven't been able to do the past few weeks. By the end, they were up and running. Clint Gutherson, the king, the captain, had a terrific game of footy.
Yeah, he's a good player, Gutho, and he's had a year. He's certainly developed his ability to create tries with his passing. It's something that's obviously been a real work on for him over his career. And the things that stood out for me were, on a positive, Kane Evans starting the game and played some big minutes, which was a great thing for the Warriors, which was a great thing from the Warriors' point of view.
No self-interest here, Tony.
But Junior Paulo off the bench, I thought he was outstanding, changing momentum of the game, his ability with his feet, his ability to pass the ball before the line or in the line. So, you know, that was seemed to have a really good impact on Parramatta, that. And the other thing was Mitchell Moses is certainly, at the start of the year, I thought he was building his game. He was very patient, where he seems to have gone a little bit back to where he's going for the big play too often as opposed to build his game. So that was a bit of a negative, I thought, for Parramatta.
He's coming on a bit later on. He did have that beautiful pass that went a metre over the top of Blake Ferguson's head at one point. But that was part of that early section where they just seemed like they felt they needed to score tries and plenty of them. So every opportunity,
they pushed it a little too far. And the
you can't doubt their talent, Tone. Yeah. Everyone talks about, you know, what's happened to the Eels. The concern for me is they're trying to find the form that they're in at the start of the year. But it's sort of the wrong time of the year to be finding that form, because the other sides that built their foundations the same time Parramatta did in those early rounds are now developing and getting better, and they're improving. And you see that with Penrith and Canberra and the Roosters and Melbourne Storm. They're all playing a lot better now than they were at the start of the season. All those young players that have, you know, especially when you speak about Penrith, that, you know, two or three gamers at the start of the year, now 15, 16 gamers, and you can see how they're playing with confidence and they've settled into the top grade and they're doing it quite comfortably at the moment. So the thing for the Eels, and for me, is now they're trying to, you know, find the form that they're in at the start of the year, which probably isn't going to be good enough anyway if they do that at the back end of the year, and they don't look like doing it. And they were, you know, they were really impatient last night again, and they've always got the ability. They can set up a try, they can put on a nice play when they need to, but the foundations for mine aren't there. Some sides at the start of the year go in to play finals, and some sides at the start of the year use the competition proper to build for a premiership tilt. And I think there's clubs that have done that really well and built their season really well and are heading into the finals, you know, in really good shape. And for me, Parramatta are just going to head into the finals, kind of be happy to make the finals and probably bow out early.
Even though they will in all likelihood be fourth, so they'll be in that top four, they'll get a second chance.
Yep.
You don't reckon they're in the show?
I don't think you can flick a switch and then hit top form and compete with the better sides in the competition in the finals. No, you need to bring your game. You need to slowly build, have the foundations in place, be getting better on a weekly basis, get into the finals at full throttle and do your best, because you're going to be playing other sides that are going to be at their best at that time of year.
So you're saying the Panthers, the Roosters, Storm, is that it?
And the Raiders.
The Raiders there for you?
I believe the Raiders are probably, you know, it's history will say that, you know, there's not a lot of sides that can win it from fifth, but I believe if the Raiders finished at fifth with their experience from last year, with what they've developed at the back end of this year is crucial, I think they could do it.
They've been playing well, the Raiders, haven't they? They've sort of certainly played better footy in the last 6 weeks than they did when they first sort of come out of, I suppose, the COVID period. So I agree with Gerds and the fact they're actually playing their best footy now. And I agree with Gerds too that Parramatta's not playing as well as they were at the start of the year. And the Melbournes, Roosters, Penrith are all playing, you know, some pretty good footy, you know. So the positive for Parramatta is they're going to finish in the top four, aren't they? So they're going to get two bites at it anyway. But, you know, they certainly need to recapture a little bit of that better form from early in the year if they're going to give it a shout.
Another positive, at least, there are a few, I guess, nervous Para fans and their coaching staff as well when Junior Paulo was put on report, but the charges have come out. So it's a grade one dangerous contact charge for
the hip drop
tackle. Hip drop on for exactly. Well,
for what?
I didn't even know
there was such a charge
as a hip drop.
Hip drop.
I thought it was a dance move, but still.
Yeah. I don't know how you.
It might have been.
Could be. So the hip drop. So I understand the idea that they want to protect players from the knee down as everyone else. But there's, you know, anybody going
in. Let me ask you this, guys. If David Fifita doesn't stay down and just jumps up and play the ball, is it a penalty?
No.
Definitely not.
No.
So why is it a penalty?
Exactly.
Are we now making decisions based on the reaction of the players that are involved in the tackle?
Well, if there's
a hip drop? Yeah. If someone doesn't get injured, I'll ask you that,
what's
Tony.
The call? The call is that he has gone from...
Because I reckon you'd see 20 hip drops a game.
So somebody who's holding the player, you know, waist or thigh, and then drops down to
get
the lower leg.
Deck. Get him on the deck. If there's no injury there, we play on.
That looked unavoidable.
It looked unavoidable.
It's a ridiculous decision. And there's been a few over the weekend.
Brad, yes, we are going to go and have a little segment, I think, where you are going to go through the ridiculous decisions, which would be fun.
It's madness, Tony.
It's madness.
And you know, this is the thing. This guy now, Junior Paulo, is going to get 75 points, yeah?
Yeah, so
and
at
so
least,
if that carries over into the finals, well, then he could potentially miss a game for a dance move in round 20, in round 19. It's stupid.
That's the thing, that even if they don't miss a game now, which he won't, the carryover points is the issue, and it could absolutely screw them at the pointy end of the season if they're still there.
Let's have a listen to what Coach Brad Arthur had to say.
Oh, there's nothing in that, is there? Look, shouldn't have been a penalty. You know, from that penalty there, we defended three or four sets on our line. No, that's not a penalty. What's he supposed to do? That's not the description of the hip tackle.
Not a penalty from Brad Arthur, not a penalty from everybody here. Nathan Brown, what do you think?
Yeah, no, a little bit stiff, isn't it? Yeah, I appreciate that over the course of the years, there's been some different areas of the tackle which are been, I suppose, coached and aren't in the spirit of the game. But I think that was just a bit of an unavoidable accident, one basically for me. But we've seen some, I still think the worst decision I've ever seen was the week before from the video ref to take the try away from
Lindsay Collins.
That's, they just got to be careful not to go open a can of worms and go looking for things that just aren't happening, you know. And
well, in some cases, they have to look for things like people putting their feet over the dead ball, the touchline when they're scoring tries.
No, we don't. What's the point of that? There's no need to check that.
We will have a closer look at some of those decisions because obviously we're heading into finals and, you know, the focus on referees sometimes can be unfair, but other times you've got to go, well, we've got to put the spotlight on it and see what's going on. So there's a few of those decisions we'll get to.
As a whole, though, the refs have been good this year, haven't they? Yep. I think we all agree with the change of rules, going from two refs to one ref. I think they've done a great job this year.
And now going just to one in the bunker as well. So they're trying to make adjustments. They're trying to do the right thing. But
I noticed the one in the bunker, it took Stephen Clark last night a hell of a long time to come up with some decisions in that Panthers game. I think there was the try to Tabuai Fadeau, they're all important tries, but the game was well and truly over and it was in the last few minutes. And it took 5 minutes to come up with that decision.
Tell me this, if Graham Mannersley comes out and tells us on Monday whether the decisions were right or wrong, why doesn't he just do all the bunker games? Why doesn't he just get straight to the top? Felix could do that.
You think he
could? But then if he gets it wrong, who's going to hold Graham Mannersley accountable?
Ryan Girdler, obviously, on the radio. What about Brisbane then? I mean, there was effort there, and there were times where they could get back into the game. There was an intercept, I think it was, or that crueled them in the second half. But they're now sitting, for the moment, on the bottom of the competition, looking at a wooden spoon with the Bulldogs having won their game on Thursday night. What did you make of the Broncos?
Oh, look, there's no doubt their last few weeks defensively they've seen like they've had a fair bit more resilience. They've obviously changed the way they're defending and it seems like that for the group of players they've got, it seems to be better. But to see the Broncos, I suppose, on the bottom of the table is not something that any of us would have thought. I never thought I would have saw that in my whole time of rugby league because of where the club once was and where they are now. So it's not great for the Broncos, but I suppose we all go through it at some stage and I'm sure they'll come out the other side.
What about the conspiracy theory of Wayne, the Bunnies, going down to the Doggies to help hand the Broncos the wooden spoon?
Wow.
Have you seen that floating around?
No.
Well, yeah. I've seen it.
Wayne.
Pete Evans has come up with that thing, along with the coronavirus.
Look, I found it interesting. Wayne helping to hand the Broncos the spoon.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely ironic.
Wayne demotivated the Rabbitohs to play the Bulldogs. Yeah. That's a beauty. Isn't it?
That's good.
Rugby league. He just didn't give his best pre-game speech. He gave potentially a flat one, not as inspirational as normal.
You got to feel sorry for the Broncos last night. I mean, they lost Croft in the middle of the week. He got knocked out. And then in the opening, I think it was the opening set of six, Sivo comes through and knocks out Young Gamble. Oh, yeah. So they're without a six. They throw Stags in there. But if you look at their lineup, like T.O. and Offengowie, like representative players. Luke, representative player. Glenn, representative player. Fafita, representative player. So I know everyone's talking about the people that the Broncos have out. Darius Boyd, representative player. Stags, future representative player. Good young halfback in Dearden. I know there's excuses and reasons for the Broncos to be where they are. But when you look, and I look at that, I look at their lineup every week and I think, and I tipped them last week in Gold Coast, so I said, they can't be that far away from a win. Because when I look at their side on paper, they've got players there that like, and then you go through the Bulldogs lineup and you think the Bulldogs, they come up with a performance like they did against South Sydney. But you look at the Bulldogs lineup and you think, who in that side is going to be able to, you know, somehow find their way to the trial line or create something, an opportunity? They get themselves in good positions on the field, but they can't convert. When I look at this Broncos side, I don't see that. But then they look so far away from winning a game, it's hard to believe that they sit where they are, given the people that still take the field on a weekly basis.
Yeah, it's been a weird old season for them. And the weird thing is, I mean, Brownie, you've been through the whole process this year already, but still they sit with no decision about who will be their coach for next year, which is going to be still a little bit unsettling, I would have thought.
Yeah, I would have thought so. And I would have thought that, you know, if truth be told, it's only out of Greeny and Kevy Walters, I would have thought they could have made that decision now. I mean, the same people have interviewed Kevy before, so why do they need to interview Kevy again? Because Kevy's still going to be the same person they interviewed 2 years ago. More experience with Origin, I suppose. But if it's only those two that are in the fight, like I would have thought for the stability of the club and recruitment and letting players go and planning, that I would have thought a decision could be made.
Didn't they say there's 10? There's 10 people that they're interviewing? Didn't I read that somewhere? Maybe Rudy's sure. Dobbo. Is Dobbo coming on today?
Yeah, I think they originally there was a list of 10 and maybe interviewing 5, but they're all sort of saying that at least it's the favourites are still Kevy and Paul Green.
Okay.
But again, maybe they have to go because of the fact that, again, it's a publicly listed company. The formalities, I think they have to go through all of that and a lot of people involved in the decision. But
if there's more people at the interview, and I can understand why it would take an amount of time because obviously it's you need to find the right type of coach for your club, you know, and it didn't work out with Siebes where it was working with Siebes at South. So obviously Anthony Seibold knows about coaching, but that group of players, wrong age of experience, wrong type of position for Siebes at that stage. And so if they've still got a lot of hope to turn that club around quickly, but they need to make the decision right on what type of coach they need because, as Gurge said, there's plenty of decent players there. They've got some money to spend as well, you know. So there's a few good ones out injured that aren't playing. So I could appreciate why they're taking their time if they are interviewing a number of people. But if it's only a two-horse race, it's pretty easy to make a decision.
When you do get interviewed for a role, what is the process like? Is it a chit chat about your vision? Are they expecting, you know, PowerPoint presentations? Well, like, how in depth are they?
Everyone's different. I don't do PowerPoint presentations.
Yeah, walk in with a projector that's not me, and a little clicker.
No, I just talk.
A pointer, like a stick.
Yeah, no, that's not. But some people do because that suits them. Yeah, some people. Everyone's got their own style, you know. And if you try and be someone you're not,
yeah. Ricky's got his overhead projector.
Yeah.
But everyone's different, aren't they? You know, and you got to be who you are and present yourself because at the end of the day, you're. If you can put a, I suppose, a facade out there.
You don't want to sell something that you're not.
All right. Well, Brisbane may be down the bottom of the table. We'll head to the top, the very top next. The Panthers, 32-12 winners over the Cowboys on the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M footy. Woo! The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Ryan Girdler, Emma Lawrence, Nathan Brown, Tony Squires with you. 26-12, the Eels over the Broncos last night. We're now joined by Mitchell Moses. G'day, mate. Congratulations.
Hey, guys. How you going?
Very well, thank you. It was a win you guys needed and some confidence in terms of getting across that try line. Maybe a little bit impatient early, but the tries came in the end.
Yeah, exactly. We wanted to try to build pressure and probably put that on myself. I probably was pushing it a bit too much at the start of the game, but eased into the game, and then you know, the points came. So we'll take some positives out of it, but definitely some things that we can work on.
You certainly wouldn't have copped any flack over throwing the ball over the top of Blake Ferguson's head, would you?
I seen Ben Teo on the bench. I think I was aiming for him. He was run on the sideline, mate. That was a it's something that I wish I could take back, but you know, I'll learn from it and fix it up.
Take us, Mitch, to that incident in the game where there was the tip-on from Gutho and it actually went out to Fergo for his second try of the night, but then it was called back. Did you have your head around what was going on with that?
I didn't know what was happening. I think Henry called a knock-on, and I said, how is it a knock-on if it didn't hit the ground? And then the touchy was saying, check it, and then there was already a call or something like that. And so we challenged it, obviously, and Henry come up to me at the end of the game and said he stuffed up and he made the wrong call and he was sorry. So, mate, the rest make the wrong decision sometimes, and you know, you can't blame him in the heat of the moment. It's tough, but yeah, we were a bit filthy. I think Fergo was a bit more filthy as well. He's been struggling to get over the white line, so he was robbed of another one.
But Mitch, it's bizarre, isn't it? It's the tip off we kind of learnt last night. It's not classified as a pass. So they can look at it and judge on whether it's a knock-on or not, but whereas a forward pass, well, you know, can't be adjudicated. So it's a weird one. Did you know that a tip-on wasn't a pass?
I didn't know that at all. I thought it was classified as a pass. Well, if they went up as a forward pass, then we wouldn't have had a chance to challenge it.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I don't know why they can't just overcall it and just say it was a try, really, because Fergo scored, so I'm not too sure.
Mitch, another decision that had some confused was Junior Paulo on report. Not sure if you've heard this morning, but he'll be free to play with the early guilty plea. Is it one of those things, it's unavoidable in your situation, that type of, I guess they're describing as the hip drop, really?
Yeah, 100%. I think if you're sitting on their ankles and things like that, I mean, it's you're going to get caught in these positions. I think trying to tackle a person like David Fafita, who's always wrestling and throwing people off him, and he's such a hard man to bring down. I think he's going to get caught in those positions. And it was, I think, you know, they're saying it was like a duty of care thing. Like, we, once we hit him screen, we let go straight away. Like, we kind of were, I guess you could say. But, yeah, it's just one of those situations. It's going to be hard to nail those. It's I don't know how we got charged, to be honest.
Mitch, early in the year, mate, I thought you were probably in your career best form, and I thought you played with great patience and probably less big plays, really good kicking game, and really build into games. Is that something you worked on with Joey Johns, or just something that naturally comes through experience?
Yeah, it was more just having chats with Joey, I guess, and Brad helped me a lot there and showed a bit of confidence in me that, you know, that it was my team and that I could take control there and come up with those plays. And a little, like you said, I didn't have to come up with the big plays. It was just easing into the footy, and you know, the big plays do come when you're easing into your game. So I kind of gone away from that, I think, the last few weeks. So something that I really want to bring back.
How's the feeling been? I mean, obviously the last few weeks, mate, you guys haven't been at your best. You're finding a way to win footy games, but how's the feeling around camp? Are you guys confident? Obviously, you know what it's like to be in a winning side, and how that carries through to training and obviously your day-to-day life. How is it feeling out there at the moment?
Yeah, it's not too bad. It's pretty sweet. You know, we I think we fixed up a few things in our attack last night, and we were really playing for each other last night. I thought we were missing that the past couple of weeks, so it was good to get that back and, you know, get over the white line a fair bit there last night. So we'll take some positives coming out of that game, I guess, and it'll be a big game for us next week against the Tigers, Benji's last game, and Chris Lawrence's last game for the Tigers. So they'll be up and ready, and I think it's a good test for us heading to the finals.
Defensively against Penrith, pretty solid, even though they scored 20 points. It was a yeah, solid performance, and I think you take a fair bit out of that into last night's game. Attack was better last night. Now it's about putting it all together, yeah?
Exactly right. You know, it's a bit of a process, and hopefully we can nail, you know, both sides of the footy in defence and attack this week heading to the Tigers game. Like I said, it's going to be a massive game. They're going to be up for it, so it'll be a great test for us.
Hey, Mitch, I think initially we all thought Dylan Brown will be out for the rest of the season, but is it right he could be back for that second week of the finals? Is that where it's at this stage, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's where it's at. I think that'll be 6 weeks by then. So he's tracking really, really well, and he's doing everything he can to get out there as quick as he can. So, you know, the physios will do right by him and you know, not rush him, but if he's ready to play, he's ready to play.
You talked about the difficulty of tackling David Fifita. Well, today, yeah, Tyson Gamble's trying to remember what it's like to tackle Mike Asuva. How brutal was that?
Yeah, it was pretty big contact, I guess. And it was good to see Mike, you know, carrying the ball like that. We haven't seen him carrying the ball like that for a while. And it's good to, I guess it's kind of good to see him coming off the back fence like that. It's very upsetting for Tyson. Obviously, finally got his chance again to play, you know, first grade footy, and for that to happen is pretty heartbreaking for him, I guess. And but yeah, it's good to see Mike coming off the back fence like that.
Mitch Moses, congratulations on that win, important leading into these finals. Thanks for having a chat with us, mate.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Mitchell Moses after the Eels. 26-12 winners over the Broncos, looking at that Tyre Power scoreboard. We might go to Brownie next, talk about some Warriors news, see what's going on there, and we'll play a little bit of 3 and 5 as well, all ahead. It's a Saturday scrum. Doing it for King G.
The Triple M Saturday scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Great to have your company. The Brave New Zealand Warriors, their campaign for a spot in the finals did end last weekend, but across this season they've done a remarkable thing. Nathan Brown is the incoming coach for the team. Where are you at the moment? I read that there's going to be, will you be there at Christmas? There's going to be kind of, they have some time off and then you get a pre-season in. What's the shape of it?
There's a number of possibilities at the moment in time, which we're not 100% sure of, obviously because of borders and that, but all the players will obviously have their time away. You know, the players, depending on how long they've or how old they are or how many pre-seasons they've had, there's all sort of different rules in place. Obviously, you know, not only the Warriors, but clubs that have got players that need to go back into Queensland or back to Melbourne, they've obviously got isolation periods now too. So next year's pre-season for all clubs will definitely be shorter. And then you've obviously got the guys that are going to be going to the squads that are going to go into the Origin, which will change the format again. Yeah, but the competition finishing later, quarantine for isolation periods is going to make, you know, your pre-season, your period before Christmas that you train will be a fair bit shorter than any normal time. And for us as a club, we don't know yet whether we'll have be able to have everyone in New Zealand or whether we'll have to have it sort of separated because, you know, you need players to be able to spend time with their families and loved ones at Christmas as well.
And do you know as yet in terms of next year, you probably obviously wouldn't exactly where you're going to be. I mean, is it a Central Coast? Is it Redcliffe? Or can you be in New Zealand? You don't know.
No, I think we'll be a little bit clearer in the next sort of, you know, 2 weeks, I'd imagine. Next sort of 1 to 2 weeks, we'll be a little bit clearer, I suppose, on, you know, where we'll be if we are going to be based in Sydney, what that looks like. And obviously, you know, the borders opening, what sort of, what effect that could have on the squad and the club as well. So there's a lot of unknown at the moment, but I'm sure in the next few weeks there'll be some sort of decisions made, which will give everyone a bit of a indication and be able to plan.
And what about Adam Fanua-Blake? He's a, you know, terrific player. He's decided he wants out from Manly for personal reasons. He doesn't want to be, well, I think they've agreed he can't sign with the Sydney club. So the Warriors comes into view.
Yeah, look, he's certainly an outstanding player, Adam. He's in the, you know, if you look at that position, front row position, he's in the top echelon of players that in the world. You know, he's certainly not only played some terrific footy for Manly, but he's been a big part of the Tongan success as well against Australia. So he's certainly a player that fits the bill, you know, not only for our club, but for most clubs. When a player of Adden's talent comes on the market, there's always people looking to move players or do certain things because they don't come on the market every day. It's very rare a player of that quality comes on the market at this time of the year. So, but he's certainly a player that would not only help our squad, but he helps any squad, Adden, because he's such a high-quality player and he's only 24, so his best years are coming.
I just want to play you a little bit of Reedy, who we'll have on for his mail in a little bit later on in the show. But he was talking about Adam Fanua-Blake, and I get, and not in any disparaging way, but saying that those kind of movements can have benefits even for Manly if he does leave in terms of salary cap and other players. Let's have a listen.
Whisper around the traps has been that Manly have got a really tight salary cap and they've had one for a while now, and that there were some rumours around Marty Tapau and some other players that they were potentially free to go. Now that issue's removed with Adam Fanua-Blake, so I think Manly are almost, I wouldn't say relieved is the right word, but I think it makes their life a lot easier. So I think they'll let him go because it helps Manly because they're in a bit of a predicament as well, and it gives them money to spend. Now they can maybe look at an edge back row to replace Joel Thompson. Luke Garner got mentioned, and maybe it opens the door for Kieran Foran, and he's the other guy that's been mentioned. Look, Manly don't have a hooker. I understand Danny Levi's been told he's free to go. It gives them options, it gives them alternative.
Just looking on the bright side, really.
They need to fill that nine jersey, and I don't know where Fainu is and what that situation looks like at the moment.
He's not back in court then, I think, to June or July. Okay. So it'll be a while. But they've actually just re-signed him.
Is that next year he's back in court?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's been the hole that I think they've struggled to fill this year. You just can't replace a guy like Adam Fanua-Blake. I mean, he's just a really hard guy to replace. And they've mentioned some good players that you can bring to the edges to replace, you know, Joel Thompson's and the like. Front rowers of that quality are rare. There's probably, you know, there's maybe half a dozen, you know, in the competition. Once you've got one,
hang on.
You've got to hang on. And if you somehow need to let him go for some reason, chances are you're not going to replace him unless you've got some good young guys in your system coming through. Young Paseka's there. Maybe he's going to, you know, develop into a good player and a good leader. But, gee, he's an influential player around that club, Adam.
Another influential player you want to hang on to is a guy called Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. Now, that seems it could be a simpler operation for the Warriors, given that what I read anyway is that the opportunity for him to go to the All Blacks or play rugby, the dollars don't kind of stack up. Not that's all that it's about, but the Warriors keeping him seems stronger possibility.
Yeah, I haven't had any contact with Roger for about, you know, a week or so. I'll have a chat with him next week again, so I actually haven't spoke to him personally, but I know there's been plenty of dialogue between Pete O'Sullivan, Cameron George and Bruce Sharrock, which is Roger's agent. And where it's all at the moment, I don't 100% know, but there is a possibility Roger, yeah, could be playing rugby league next year, which would obviously be a bonus for the club. But I also know that Roger does have a desire to represent the All Blacks like many, many young Kiwi kids.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big lure, isn't it, for all of them? All right, thanks, Brownie. Plenty to come. We're going to have the Coach's Corner from Brownie in the next hour as well. Sterlo is in at 2 o'clock. Plenty ahead. Saturday scrum for King G. It's a Saturday scrum.
What are you taking my paper? What are you doing, Tony?
I don't trust any of you. I trust Brownie.
Okay.
So what can I do with the paper in front of me then?
Well, there's a whole range. There are team lists. There's a whole range of things that you could
do. That's why I've
got
it in front
involved.
Of me, Tony.
I know. I understand that. Later on, you can have it back. But for the moment, in fact, if you could all move your rundowns away from or turn them over as well, that would be helpful because we're going to play some of this.
Ladies and gentlemen, three in five.
Oh, I love Tony sessions. Yeah. I love the three in five.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Three and five.
Yes, once again, it's not really three and five. And once
can
again,
we change the opener.
Yes, the opener.
Where is
quiz
the
opener? There's not much of a budget, obviously. So, well, maybe we'll come in and make one.
Let's
ourselves.
Take some of it off good celery.
Yeah.
Can't do that again.
All right.
I'll be paying
so
you.
The quiz today is all about the man who is breaking the Roosters' record for games played. As I said, as he goes out in the Sydney Cricket Ground, it'll be his 303rd game. I'm of course talking about Mitch Orbison. This is the Mitch Orbison quiz. Could you just test your buzzers? They'll be your names.
Mitch.
Oh, excellent.
Emma.
Brownie.
All right. Question number one. Please spell Orbison.
Emma.
Yes, Emma.
A U B. U-S-S-O-N.
Correct. What was Mitch's junior club?
Emma.
Yes, Emma.
Ballina Seagulls.
You didn't buzz, but yes, correct. Ballina Seagulls. Who are the
Mitch.
Other...
Mitch.
Okay.
Who are... Mitch.
Answer the question.
Roy.
Incorrect. Point off. Who are the other 300-plus gamers
Emma.
For the Roosters? Yes.
Luke Ricketson.
Yes.
Anthony Minicello.
Correct. Spell Minicello.
Emma.
Yes, Emma. Oh.
M I N I C H E double L O.
No. Anybody, you boys want to have a go?
Oh, no. I know what it is.
No,
I know what
so
I missed.
What? You've had a go.
I know what I missed.
You don't want to have a go, Ryan?
No, I don't want to have a go.
Wow. M I N I C H E double L O. How many premierships has Mitch won? Yes, Emma.
Three.
Correct. Who offered Mitch a scholarship at the Roosters after watching him play at a schoolboy carnival? Yes, Brownie.
Arthur Beetson.
Correct. What year did he make his NRL? Yes.
2009.
Oh, close. 2007. Who did his brother James
Emma.
Make his? Yes.
Storm?
Correct. He made his NRL debut with the Melbourne Storm. What senior rep teams did...
Brownie.
Mitch, can we just check Mitch's...
Mitch, City.
Country.
City.
New South Wales country is correct. Okay, you each get a stab here. This is nearest the pin. How many players have notched up 300
Emma.
Or more NRL games? Yes, Emma. I said you can each get a go here.
Okay. I'll go 27.
27?
There is 32.
It's either 31 or 32. I'll say 33.
Well, that's good because near as the pin you win, it's 41.
It's 41, is it?
41 players. And the final, name this Orbison song. No ideas?
No.
It's Roy Orbison. It's crying. There you go. That is the Mitch Orbison.
Who wins?
That was great, Tony.
Emma Lawrence.
I reckon you got a victory today.
You are the winner. The winner are the Roosters, of course, having a player like that. That's a great record for him to go past Browning.
One of the great club players, yeah. Outstanding club player. I think he's played in 4 or 5 grand finals, won 3.
Yep.
Could possibly win another one this year. Stayed at the one club. Probably a little unlucky not to have represented at origin level, I would have thought at times, yeah. But outstanding player.
Yeah.
Never put a foot wrong.
Yeah. A good man, a good player.
Good North Coast boy.
Absolutely. Ballina Seagull. I knew you would get that. Plenty to come. Read his mail. Sterlo. We'll chat with Brad Fittler as well. It's all ahead. The Saturday Scrum for King G.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot, and strong. Install a Ream.